Hello, and welcome to Science World. Astronomers announced this past week that massive magnetic fields of the sun are about to do a serious flip-flop in polarity. Bob Doty has a report. Selah Hennessy tells us that scientists in London recently cooked up a lab-produced hamburger, something they described as the world's most expensive burger, coming in at a cost of about $300,000 to produce. And today we talk with the medical director of the UCLA Food and Drug Allergy Care Center to learn about food allergies, a condition that for some people could be deadly. This and much more are coming up for you today on VOA's Science, Health, and Technology magazine, Science World. Well, it looks like our sun will be doing a bit of a flip-flop soon. Science World's Bob Doty has more.
This week, NASA announced that in about 3 to 4 months, the polarity of the sun's massive magnetic field will reverse itself in what solar physicist Todd Hoeksema of Stanford University says will have ripple effects throughout the solar system. But don't worry, most of us won't even notice it. In fact, it's part of the normal solar cycle and takes place every 11 years. The flip of the sun's magnetic polarity takes place at the peak of each solar cycle, when, according to Hoeksema, the sun's inner magnetic dynamo reorganizes itself. Scientists are calling this particular solar cycle number 24. The effects of the sun's polarity flip will spread throughout the sun's magnetic influence, which also is known as the heliosphere. The sun's heliosphere extends billions of kilometers into our solar system, beyond Pluto. The scientists keeping an eye on the sun say that here on Earth, we may feel the effects of the flip in the form of stormy space weather and possible changes in our own climate. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
Scientists searching for a new strain of bird flu in eastern China are reporting the first case of probable person-to-person transmission of the so-called H7N9 virus. Doug Bernard has more in this report.
A report outlining the scientific investigation behind this find was reported Tuesday in the British Medical Journal and focused on the case of an adult woman and her 60-year-old father who became ill in March after a routine visit to a live poultry market and died 6 weeks later. The daughter provided direct and unprotected bedside care for her ailing father and became sick about a week after her last contact with him. She died 1 month later. Researchers say that most patients appear to have visited live poultry markets or otherwise had close contact with live birds 7 to 10 days before the onset of the illness, which has sickened more than 100 people and resulted in 43 deaths since first appearing in March. Despite the fatalities, the report stresses that the ability of the virus to transmit itself still appears, quote, limited and non-sustainable. In April, Chinese scientists said they feared that H7N9 had in some cases spread from human to human. They have scrambled to develop vaccines and other treatments, while health authorities earlier this year slaughtered hundreds of thousands of birds in live markets to bring the outbreak under control. For Science World, I'm Doug Bernard.
As if we needed another reason to love chocolate, it turns out that a cup or two of hot cocoa could be good for your brain. Faith Lapidus explains why.
Drinking 2 cups of hot chocolate a day may help older brains remain sharp. A common form of dementia is caused by problems in the supply of blood to the brain. Harvard Medical School neurologist Farzana Sarand wanted to understand how blood flow in the brain affected thinking skills. She studied a group of 60 older people with an average age of 73 who did not have dementia. 18, however, had impaired blood flow in their brain. The participants drank 2 cups of hot cocoa a day for a month. They were given tests of memory and thinking, and Saran used an ultrasound to measure blood flow during the tests. She found that blood flow to the working parts of the brain increased with the cognitive tasks. By the end of the study, the participants who had impaired blood flow had significantly improved their scores on the tests and showed an 8.3% improvement in blood flow. The other participants had no change in their performance in blood flow. There's a hypothesis that the antioxidant flavanol, which is found in cocoa, helps cognition. But Alzheimer's expert Paul Rosenberg, who wrote an editorial accompanying Saran's study in the journal Neurology, says that theory did not hold up.
Her findings actually go against that. She tested cocoa that was rich in flavanol and poor in flavanol. She found no difference.
But Rosenberg of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine calls her study an important first step toward future studies that could lead to better drugs or treatments for Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Saran's a friend, so we've talked about this. And neither of us are quite ready to jump out and say, take cocoa. But it's possible there may be a drug to develop that's sitting inside your cocoa.
But until then, we can enjoy hot chocolate, maybe with some whipped cream, simply because it tastes good. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
It's time once again for the Science World Quick Quiz. A little earlier, we told you about how the sun will soon be flipping the polarity of its massive magnetic field, something that usually happens around the peak of a solar cycle. This week for our quick quiz, we're asking, when did our current solar cycle, known as solar cycle number 24, begin? Was it A, January 4th, 2008, B, April 5th, 2010, or C, August 9th, 2011? Think about it and see if you can come up with the right answer. We'll give you the correct answer in a few minutes from now.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
Astronomers looking for new planets beyond our own solar system recently spotted one that's pink. Siri Nyrop tells us more.
Astronomers have discovered a colorful new extrasolar planet that's orbiting a sun-like star 57 light-years away. This newly found exoplanet is 4 times the size of Jupiter and can actually be seen by Earth-based telescopes. The planet is named GJ504b, and it's the lowest mass exoplanet ever to be detected using direct or visible imaging techniques. Most exoplanets, or planets outside our solar system, are discovered not by direct observation, but by using various indirect methods that infer the existence of the planet by observing the effects that it has on its parent star. What has many of the astronomers fascinated is the planet's unique color, which has been described as a dark cherry blossom or a dull magenta. GJ504b orbits its star at roughly 9 times the distance Jupiter orbits the Sun, which challenges the most widely held theory about how planets form. That theory poses that planets similar to Jupiter form from inside gas-rich debris disks that surround young stars. Collisions among asteroids and comets create a core, and when the mass of the core gets large enough, its gravity attracts gas and debris from the disk. This is Siri Nyrop for Science World.
Within 2 decades, meat created in laboratories could form a core part of our daily diets. Sayla Hennessy reporting from London, where a lab-produced beef burger was fried up this past Monday, says that many analysts warn that more meat is not necessarily what the world needs.
The hamburger that was cooked up in London on Monday was described as the world's most expensive burger. Valued at over $300,000 to produce, it certainly wasn't cheap. But those behind the project say, in the long term, artificial meat might be the best answer to a number of problems. The project's investor, Google co-founder Sergey Brin, said he backed the project for animal welfare reasons. Beyond that, its proponents say cultured meat could have major benefits for the environment and for global food security. Hannah Tuomisto is with the Institute for Environment and Sustainability, a scientific institute at the European Commission's Joint Research Centre. She says conventional meat production puts a huge strain on the environment.
Livestock production contributes around 18% of global greenhouse gas emissions, which is very significant as it is more than the total emissions from the global transportation sector.
Livestock production also uses about one-third of our global fresh water supply and one-third of land area. And she says that land area is growing fast as forests are increasingly cleared for animal feed production. In 2011, Tomisto carried out a study looking at how the production of artificial meat would compare.
My research results show that the large-scale production of cultured meat can potentially have substantially lower environmental impacts compared to conventionally produced meat.
The study found that cultured meat could potentially be produced with up to 96% lower greenhouse gas emissions, 45% less energy, 99% lower land use, and 96% lower water use than conventional meat. Tomisto notes that her study was based only on models in laboratories. It's not yet clear what levels of water and energy would be needed for a large-scale commercial operation. Charles Godfrey is with the Oxford Martin Program on the Future of Food. He says artificial or in vitro meat could potentially help feed the growing global population. He says populations are not only expanding but also getting richer, which typically correlates with a rise in meat consumption.
If the whole world was to have the meat-rich diet we enjoy in the rich world, it would be impossible for the world to supply it. So artificial meat, in vitro meat, might be one component towards meeting that increased demand.
But developing in vitro meat does not resolve all the problems, he says. Tomisto points out that today we produce more than enough food to feed the world. Often the problem is more closely related to food access than food supply. Godfrey says rather than finding new ways to produce meat, there might be another alternative.
All of us, especially in the rich West, would do better from eating less meat, from health benefits of eating less meat, as well as the environmental benefits.
He says he expects artificial meats to arrive at supermarkets first in the form of hamburgers and sausages, where the precise texture of the meat is not as important as, for example, that of a steak. He says the technology will develop over the next decade or two, but it's not yet clear whether the product will be taken up commercially. That will depend, he says, on the cost of making the meat and on whether consumers are willing to eat meat produced in a laboratory. Selah Hennessy for VOA News, London.
The Mars rover Curiosity is now in its second year on the Red Planet. Suzanne Presto reviews some of Curiosity's achievements and tells us what NASA has planned for future Mars exploration.
It has been 12 months since Curiosity landed on Mars. NASA says in that time, the rover has driven across more than 1.6 kilometers of Martian terrain. It has found evidence of an ancient stream bed and signs of wet conditions from multiple periods. Curiosity was the first rover to bore into Martian rock and reveal that the interior of the red planet is actually gray. NASA scientists say Curiosity has already answered the mission's core question. Was ancient Mars capable of supporting simple forms of life, like microorganisms? Yes, says Jim Green, director of the Planetary Division at NASA's Science Mission Directorate.
We found all the ingredients of life as measured in this material that's deposited in this ancient riverbed. Mars was habitable in its past.
He's referring to hydrogen, oxygen, and other chemicals. Curiosity has 10 scientific instruments, amounting to a roving laboratory. The science agency says the rover has fired more than 75,000 laser shots to vaporize rocks and soil and study their composition, and it has provided more than 70,000 images to give us a new view of Earth's neighbor. Curiosity is not a life detection mission, but its findings provide the groundwork for the next Mars rover to be launched in 2020, says NASA's Green.
Knowing that Mars was an environment that was habitable in its past, we're going to start seeking the signs of potential life that could have existed on Mars. And that, if we can answer that question, will change everything.
Mars is the most Earth-like of the planets in our solar system, says NASA Administrator Charles Bolden.
If life exists beyond Earth, and I am one who believes that it may very well, Mars for me is the most likely place that life will be found.
As NASA plans future Mars missions, Curiosity is traveling in the deep 150-kilometer-wide depression called Gale Crater. it is heading toward Mount Sharp, where it will study the lower layers of that Martian peak and search for clues about the planet's evolution. Suzanne Presto, VOA News, Washington.
Okay, let's see if you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz. This week we asked, when did our current solar cycle, known as solar cycle number 24, begin? Was it A, January 4th, 2008, B, April 5th, 2010, or C, August 9th, 2011? The answer is A, January 4th, 2008. That's when scientists took note of the appearance of a reversed polarity sunspot. David Hathaway of NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama, explained that new solar cycles always begin with a high-latitude reversed polarity sunspot. And reversed polarity means a sunspot with opposite magnetic polarity compared to sunspots from the previous solar cycle. He said that high latitude refers to the sun's grid of latitude and longitude, and noted that old cycle spots congregate near the sun's equator, but new cycle spots appear higher, about 25 or 30 degrees latitude. By the way, answer C, August 9th, 2011, was when the sun produced a massive X6.9 class solar flare, the third X flare of solar cycle number 24, and which so far was the most powerful. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
Thanks for listening to VOA Science, Health, and Technology News Magazine, Science World.
If you think that the number of people with food allergies has risen in recent years, you're right. The World Health Organization says that food allergies appear to be on the rise in all industrialized nations and considers it an important health issue. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention conducted a study in 2008 that showed an 18% increase in the amount of people with food allergies. While an allergic reaction could mean perhaps something as relatively mild as some sniffles or a patch of itchy skin, food allergies can also be deadly. And although the number of people actually dying each year from a food allergy is low, a person with a food allergy consuming even a microscopic bit of that food could go into severe anaphylactic shock, which could result in death. While the number of people who have a food allergy is growing, there are no clear answers so far as to why. Dr. Melinda Braskett, who is medical director of the UCLA Food and Drug Allergy Care Center and an assistant clinical professor at the university's David Geffen School of Medicine, joins us for today's one-on-one segment to give us a better understanding of food allergies and its related condition known as food intolerance. Dr. Braskett, I understand there are food allergies and food intolerance. What is the difference between the two?
Food allergies are really misguided immune reactions to foods that can result in reproducible reactions like rash and swelling and breathing problems, and these are rapid reactions. Whereas food intolerances are much more broad and hard to define, and they really fall into the category of other adverse reactions to foods, such as a migraine trigger or acne trigger or bloating without other signs.
Are there foods that are more likely to cause an allergy and also foods that cause intolerance?
Yes, absolutely. When we look at the foods that cause allergies, they're well known to us. We can all think of peanut allergy, and we've heard a story of peanut allergy or tree nut allergy or milk or soy or eggs or wheat, and those are the most common ones. When it comes to food intolerances, that might be an example of spicy foods giving me indigestion. Chocolate gives me acne. Chocolate can also be a migraine trigger.
Why does there seem to be such a dramatic rise in people getting food allergies? It seems to be pretty common today, where in the past you never heard too much about it.
And the short answer is we're unsure. For one, there is an increasing wave of more allergies across the board. We're becoming more allergic as a society. And there's a lot of research that's shown that the hygiene hypothesis is part of that, where, you know, are we become so much cleaner, and in that, we've become more likely to have immune responses to things. So that's part of it, of the general increasing wave of allergies and food allergy being part of that. But there's definitely something else going on with increasing food allergies, and we're looking at that. We're looking to see if some of the practices that we do are feeding that
You mentioned a little earlier about the various reactions, allergic reactions that someone might have to different food products. I understand they can go from very mild, I guess, to very serious.
Right, and that's really part of what we do when we see someone is we sit down and we look at the timeline, and that really helps us. And most people that have dangerous reactions to foods, it's a rapid onset, it's reproducible, and it may start as something mild such as a rash, and then it can spiral, and it's how fast things can move. So rash, swelling, then of course everyone is aware of swelling in the airway being a bigger deal, breathing problems, vomiting, or fainting, and that it can go to that level. And that's more typical of a food allergy. It can be a dose response, whereas if you have a small amount of the food, it may just be an uncomfortable sensation in your mouth, but if you have a large amount, you may have a more dramatic reaction. Or it may be that you have a mild reaction because it's more of an intolerance.
If someone suspects that he or she may have a food allergy, what should they do?
So the first thing they should do is really talk it over with their doctor and start with the primary care doctor. And I think the first decision is this a dangerous reaction? Is this something, what do I need to do to manage this? Versus, you know, is it something that is unpleasant but not dangerous? And I think sitting down and what you can do to prepare for that visit is look at two main things. What was the timeline? How soon after eating the food? How reproducible is this? Those are probably the two biggest things that I think we need to think about when we decide, hey, is this a dangerous reaction or is this just an unpleasant reaction?
Are people born with food allergies or can they develop them later in life? And if so, are there any known factors as to why someone might develop a particular food allergy?
We don't know, and the field is evolving. We used to look at little babies with eczema and say, oh, that's a food allergy that's making that eczema come out. And moms of these children and dads of these children would rip their hair out trying to eliminate what was causing the eczema. So eczema is definitely associated with food allergy, but now some of the newer thinking is that maybe the eczema is the primary problem, and having that exposure to foods on their skin somehow sends a danger signal to the body. And for example, that might be one reason, like, why are nuts such a trigger, and particularly in this country where we roast nuts and they're airborne, maybe on that skin gets a danger signal, and that's why the immune system rejects the food and sees it as a danger. So we're starting to really look at that and try to tease that apart for ourselves. And there's some other interesting things that we're doing too that we're working on. We're trying to solve this problem to minimize food allergy.
How are patients treated for food allergies?
Okay, right now, the standard therapy is avoidance and supportive care. So what we can do, you know, if you're allergic to peanuts, you avoid peanuts as an ingredient. You avoid it when it's, you know, any potential exposures to it. If you have an accidental exposure, quickly grab your antihistamines and your Benadryl and you take your Benadryl. And by doing that, that prevents a cascade effect of it. But sometimes the reaction proceeds so quickly that we can't break the cycle and people have to actually use what's called epinephrine or adrenaline to shrink the swelling and to combat the dysregulated immune reaction to the food. But the future could be more exciting.
If people can get allergies and food intolerances later in life, can they lose them?
Yeah, there are people that outgrow food allergies. And in general, younger children that have food allergies to, say, milk and eggs, they tend to outgrow it. And later in life, we may develop a food allergy, which is another process. But if we can think about the people that are outgrowing the food allergies and try to use that, how can we cultivate that? How can we get more people to outgrow their allergies? And that's the exciting future of food allergy. That's one of the things we're working on in general in the field. And so we know for people that outgrow, say, milk and egg, we look at how can you get them to tolerate it. And it seems that for some people that are allergic and not intolerant to milk and egg, if you bake the food, you bake the protein, you change it enough that the body's able to accept it. And by eating the baked food or the changed protein, they become less allergic. And in time, that sort of fosters or cultivates this outgrowing the food allergy.
That was Dr. Melinda Braskett from the Food and Drug Allergy Care Center and the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA in Los Angeles. We'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.